Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 27th day of June. Where did this year go? Anno Domini 2020, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, or the WWDC, was virtual this year, but still chock full of interesting news. Here are some of the highlights, and believe me, it's only some. iOS 14 is grabbing a bunch of features from Android. It'll have an app library, which is basically Android's folder. Similar apps will be grouped into a single square, meaning you'll have an easier time putting more apps at your fingertips. No more scrolling to the eighth page to load something.
And you can hide pages you don't ever get to anyway.
Right. However, apparently this grouping will be done by AI, so we'll see how good it is and if you can override it. Widgets are coming. If you don't know what they are, ask an Android user. They're handy little apps that sit on your home screen to give you info at a glance, like your calendar, what's playing, news, weather, etc. Picture-in-picture is probably the thing I use most on my Android phone, and I think it'll be... And I think about it the least, since it just works. It's going to be pretty cool. Siri is getting translations at last, and the App Store is doing progressive apps now, which means they'll load faster. iPad OS, in addition to getting widgets and some of the other stuff of iOS, is also getting Scribble, which converts handwriting to text. Finally, typing on any tablet keyboard is annoying. Watch OS 7 is getting new faces and the ability to share faces. It'll sense when you're washing your hands and count to 20 seconds for you. I've always assumed Apple users could count to 20 on their own, but okay.
Apparently not, because it will buzz if you stop too soon.
Yeah. They've touted new security features, but those features rely on developer self-reporting, and I'm cynical enough to think that's not going to work. Mac OS Big Sur has a slightly new look. It seems a bit cartoonish to me at first glance. I'll have to see more of it to really decide. The same thing is true of Google's new logo for Photos. It looks a little cartoonish compared to the old one. The big news is that Apple is going to be making their own processors called Apple Silicon. Microsoft Office and the Adobe products are not ready yet, but the hardware won't really be out before the end of the year. And it'll take about 2 years to fully transition to their own silicon. Apple's had some ability to do this in the past, of course. Since about 2010, they've had their own AX processors in iPhones, starting with the A4 that I know of. And now they're on, what, 12X or 13 or whatever the number is. Yeah. So we'll see how that goes in the forum, which I'll talk about in a moment. We were discussing that it's basically AMD's processors, and they're good at, you know, I was talking about how without fans, we'll see if there's overheating. And I forget, I think it was my CQ.
Yeah, it's the ARM reference design, but Apple can tool it specifically for their needs.
Right, exactly.
Rather than a general purpose CPU like Intel.
Right. And like you said, they've been using that essential processor in their iPhone since 2010 without any overheating problems. But when you put them under heavy desktop load.
Yeah, that'll be. But you can have a big fan in the desktop.
Yeah, I hope so, yeah. Anyway, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is WWDC 2020 announcements. And your choices are, wow, interesting stuff, nothing really new, nothing really interesting, and Apple. And, of course, other. So far, Apple is leading with a significant portion of the votes. If you said other, please head on over to the forums. If you go to our website at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, You'll see the forum, second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 27 June 20, WWDC 2020 announcements. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. To me, the most interesting announcement is Apple doing their own silicon. Everything else is honestly, all the iPhone stuff is catch up. Android's been doing that for quite a while now, and it's very nice.
And it's there's a back and forth between
There is. Yeah, absolutely. There is. Right. But at this point, they're pulling stuff from Apple, from Android. Android in the past has pulled stuff from Apple.
Yep.
But what I'm getting to is as a person who's been using most of those features for a long time, I say you're going to love them. You're really going to love them. One of the things that's most annoyed me about iPhones is that you couldn't group things together. So stuff ends up on page 8.
Well, you can make folders, but then you have so many folders, you can't keep track of them.
Well,
you can put a folder full of apps.
Okay, that's all right then. But now they're doing it automatically for you because...
Yeah, and the apps you use the most will have a folder. Right. The apps you've most recently downloaded will have its own folder.
Right. So that'll be nice. That'll be an interesting thing. Picture in picture really is app in app is what it really is. So, for example, when I'm on the phone to somebody and they say, you know, we should meet or whatever, and I go to my calendar, then the phone app turns into the little square in the corner of the calendar app. And then I can tap on that and go back to the phone. So it's really not picture in picture, although that's kind of what it looks like, but it's really app in app. And that is possibly, like I said, the thing I use most on my phone and really don't even think about because it just
does it.
Works. It's just, it's excellent. And this whole idea of the new silicon, I'm actually very excited about that. Right now, the only device that has it is the reference model for developers, and that's a Mac Mini.
With an iPad Pro stuffed inside.
With an iPad Pro stuffed inside it.
Yeah.
So it's a fairly slow device comparatively. I mean, iPad Pro is fast for a tablet.
The A12Z.
Right.
But what some of the things they were showing in the keynote is they were running the reference platform. So Apple, of course, has all of their own apps are transitioned to Apple Silicon.
Right.
So already they were showing Final Cut. And their big reveal at the end, Final Cut Pro, super high-end video editing program, doing 3 4K streams simultaneously on this A12Z. But what was almost more impressive is it only has 16 gigs of RAM.
Right.
And it could still do 3 4K streams.
Right, right. And if you do the math, you're pretty much most of the way there.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about that. It should be very, very nice. Very big things coming from that. They're going to be transitioning. It's going to be years before they're. It's same thing happened when they switched from the PowerPC platform to Intel
in 2006. Steve sort of said the same thing, and for the same reasons. The PowerPC from Motorola couldn't keep up with the thermals. And Intel was doing better. Now we're in the same place. Intel can't keep up with the thermal demands, and so Apple's and so they said they were going to do 2 year transition in 2006 to 2008, and they actually finished a year sooner.
Yep.
And so one thing Tim did say is that there are the first Apple Silicon based computer, and we're hoping there's a easier name than that. The Apple Silicon based computer. The first new one is going to come out before the end of the year. So everyone is wondering whether it's going to be a low end, super light MacBook Air, or
that's
MacBook
Pro. The smart money's betting on.
Yeah,
I think it's really going to be the Mac Mini.
The Mac Mini could come out because they've already done it in a reference platform. Yeah,
right.
But he did say that there's still Intel Macs coming this year too.
Well, that's the problem.
Because they've been under
transitioning.
Yeah.
Right. So there's going to be at least a year, if not two, of Intel Macs coming while people are ramping up for the Apple Macs, and
they did say that they're going to be supporting Intel Mac with OS updates for many more years.
Right.
And in the previous PowerPC to Intel transition, it was 8 years.
But will that cause a holdout?
Well, that's the problem, right? That's the risk that you take.
I'm not going to buy the new one now because I'm waiting for the even newer one.
For the even newer one, which I know is coming within 2 years. And, you know, I've only had this machine for a year or two or three anyway. So, yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
It's sort of like that commercial we used to see on TV. You know, the guy's got this latest, greatest computer in the backseat of his car.
Yeah, the T5.
Going down the highway, and all of a sudden he sees his poster for the brand new, newer one.
Yeah.
But the other thing, of course, is that it's going to be interesting to see what happens with apps. Because this as happened when they transitioned to Intel, they have fat apps.
Universal.
Excuse me, Universal Apps.
And now we have Universal 2.
Right, it's Universal 2. And what that means is that apps will have both Intel code and Apple Silicon code in them, which means they're going to be bloated.
That's why they're fat.
Which is why they're fat, which is which means that anybody who's already pushing the limit on their devices may find that they're out of space.
Yeah,
choking it.
So developers can choose to release an Apple Silicon only version or a universal version. And then similarly, we have Rosetta 2, which is the translation for the Intel apps that haven't got new Apple Silicon versions. And one thing they said about that was a little different than originally Rosetta would translate on the fly. As you ran the program, Rosetta 2 translates the program once, and then it just works. And so they were showing Tomb Raider, showed a couple of games running under Rosetta on the Apple Silicon Mac, and it just didn't care.
No, I get that. The problem, though, is that if that translation happens once, they got to store it.
Yeah.
So again,
you're
using more space. So I think people who are running at the high, you know, running tight.
Yep.
Are going to have a problem, but they have to understand that's their fault.
Yeah, yeah.
You get rid of some stuff. You have to have space on your hard drive. You have to have extra RAM.
Mm-hmm.
If it's your phone, you can't fill it up.
Yep.
Well, like we've said before, the price of poker keeps going up.
Yeah.
And the minimum storage sizes are getting bigger too on the devices. Yeah.
Right.
The one thing that they did say, but not enough, is that virtualization. So, and they showed running Ubuntu in a virtualization window on the Mac, which isn't that big a deal because it's already Unix.
Right.
So you can run an Ubuntu window next to your BSD window. Okay.
Well, yes, and you can get a version of Ubuntu for ARM.
Yeah.
So they didn't have to translate anything.
But what they didn't say is Windows virtualization.
Windows doesn't run on ARM.
It does.
Well,
pseudo.
Back during the PowerPC to Intel, in the PowerPC days, there were emulators that would emulate an Intel processor. You could run Windows, soft Windows was the big one, and it was god awful slow, but it worked. And so there was a segment of the people that were really happy when Apple switched to Intel because now Windows would run natively.
Right.
But now we're switching to the ARM based. And Windows on ARM, Microsoft doesn't sell directly. They only license it to OEMs. And the ARM-based PCs that are running Windows are pretty crappy as
they are crappy.
So are we going to lose that Windows option on the Mac? And that goes a little bit into the story we had a couple of weeks ago about Parallels Remote Access Server. And they showed Parallels Desktop that was running their virtualization to get Linux. You'd be able to run a virtual Windows session with a remote server actually hosting the Windows code on an Intel-based machine and sending you the screen.
You essentially become a dumb terminal.
Yeah.
Excuse me, a smart terminal, now they're calling it.
Yeah. A thin client. Remember that one?
Thin client. Yeah. I remember thin client. I had a laptop that was a thin client. It's all it was from Wise. Those are all possibilities. The problem becomes, where do you run Windows at the other end? You're paying somebody for that privilege, and you pay them yearly or monthly or whatever.
Yep.
You don't buy it once. And of course, Microsoft would like that to be them running on Azure. which is what they've been what they've been aiming for all along. So it's a and it takes, you know, Apple has always had the guts to say everything you know is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to just change everything and screw it.
This is like the fifth major transition in 40 years. So, so you have about 10 years between major transitions. So this last one was in 2006. We got 14 years.
Yeah. You win if that's how that works.
Yeah.
But it's a long process. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. And people are impatient.
Yeah.
And I get that.
They want it yesterday.
Yep.
They want it yesterday.
So all the tech pundits are going nuts. The average people aren't going to care. They're going to buy a computer. It's going to get on the internet. It's going to get their mail. It's going to look
at the 90% of the people don't use any of the power in any computer.
Yep.
It hardly matters what they get. Most people don't need anything more than a Chromebook.
We've been saying that for decades.
Right.
That, you know, 90% of the people don't use half the power.
Right.
That's in that machine.
It used to be the 80-20 rule. Now it's sort of the other way around.
Yeah.
It's your gamers. It's all, mainly your gamers that are in there doing live stream gaming, you know, and they've got to keep up with the action. That's about it. Otherwise, anybody else that's even streaming movies or anything else, it's like, oh.
Yep.
No big deal.
So we'll see how that comes along, but we're going to find the transition where people start saying, I'm out of space in my phone, I'm out of space in my tablet, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Well, yes, because they're transitioning and you essentially have doubled the size of each of your apps.
Yep.
And if you've filled more than half of your phone, you're out of space. Done.
Game over.
It's just the way it works. All right, we got a few minutes. We can talk to Fred from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Fred. What's up?
Hey, I got a couple questions.
Yeah.
I went on the website, the Soundbites website, Ask Nick. And is there a place that I can type in a question?
You can, Ask Nick is actually kind of separate from Soundbites. To send a question to Ask Nick, you send it to Q&A. That's all spelled out, Q&A. At asknick.com.
And actually, because nobody would know what an ampersand is?
Because it's an email address.
Yeah.
Yeah. At any rate.
Okay.
Yeah, so, yeah, Q-A-N-D.
You can. There's actually, I'm looking for it now. If you click the blue get all their stuff button. Get other Ask Nick stuff button, the blue button at the bottom of the page. Okay. On that next page, you will see the address Q&A@asknick.com, and you can just click on that and send me a message that way.
Okay, great.
Okie doke.
The next thing I have is years ago, I did some work with Windows Explorer would allow me to edit the properties page and put in a description or put in a comment. And I could search by that. I could, when I did a search, it included that text box that I typed into. The newer ones don't have that I could find.
You mean Windows Explorer for the desktop?
Right. Is there a way to tag a file to identify some sort of other than in the file name itself, but is there a way to tag a file with keywords?
Well, if you right click on a file, you should be able to select details.
There used to be a comments field, but that's now different.
Yeah.
Yeah,
looking for
Windows,
a picture there.
That's Windows 7.
There's a properties tab.
Right, properties, but I can't edit anything in it.
Right.
Properties, details, comments.
Right. So if you right-click on file, choose properties, right? There's a details tab.
Not always.
But there is, you can go to the comments field.
It may depend on whether you have Windows Home or Windows Pro.
Right.
It's Windows Pro. Yeah, but it is 7.
So it's Windows 7?
Yeah.
Okay, that's entirely different. Yes, in Windows 7, you have the same thing. You can right-click on a file, and there should be a Details tab with comments.
I'll have to go back to check that.
It isn't showing it here. This is from 2017, and in Windows 7, they removed the comment. But you can create a desktop.ini file that will show you a comment when you hover over the thing. That's a little annoying.
That's very annoying.
Yeah.
I go about doing the INI file?
I'll post a link. I'm trying to find a better way to do that.
Yeah, you're right. Windows 7 kind of, apparently they removed that. Sorry.
Yeah. Because where I'm working, we have a lot of files, parts that we make by company and then by part number. And the more I'm working there, the more I see, well, gee, that's a similar part to this other part. And I could use I'm a CNC programmer.
Right.
I could use some of that language that I've already programmed, just copy and paste, into a new part that's almost identical, just a different diameter.
Right.
But I have no way of identifying it in the thousands of files that are saved.
Yeah, I am sorry. Windows 7, of course, they've clearly abandoned it. You know that.
Yeah. Okay.
And it doesn't look like they're going to ever add anything like that back again. I'm sorry.
We're supposed to be upgrading to 10. A lot of new machines are going to be adding in them.
Right.
But it's not now.
Sorry.
I need it now.
Yeah, I get that.
You've mentioned an INI file.
Yeah, Steve.
Yeah, I'm posting a link. It's in the Microsoft Developer Forum. I'm trying to see how dangerous it is to do. But
he'll publish a link to that.
Oh, this will customize folders, not files.
Okay. That'll because the jobs are sorted by a folder with a part number on it as the name.
Well, that'll work.
That might work then. Yeah.
All right, Steve will get that posted, and it'll be up in a few minutes.
Okay. Well, I'll look for it soon.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Bye now. Bye bye. Yeah, I'm afraid that the answer increasingly for any Windows 7 question is sorry.
I don't even know if Windows 10 still has it. Probably not.
I don't know. All right, that music tells me we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Before I get to the next news item on the YouTube stream in the chat, Archandra Online reminds us of the Osborne effect. That's when Adam Osborne had created the Osborne 1, which was at the time the hottest seller on the planet. It was essentially a $1,600, $1,995, so a $2,000 system with $2,500 worth of software included. It was like getting a discount on the software and getting the hardware to run it for free. And they sold like hotcakes, and then he announced the next version, and people just stopped immediately buying, waiting for the next version to come out, which never did, because they were planning on money from the current sales, which completely dried up. So Yeah, that's
a double-edged sword.
It's a double-edged sword. So announcing like this is a kind of a gutsy move, and but it has to be done.
I read an interesting analogy. I think it was on Rene Ritchie's podcast. A bakery doesn't make fresh bread every day, assuming you're going to come in every day. They make fresh bread every day because any day you do come in, there'll be fresh bread.
Right. Right. All right, Microsoft has quietly acknowledged, I hope you're sitting down, Microsoft has quietly acknowledged that some of Windows 10's most recent updates are causing rather serious problems for some PCs. According to the company, the KB4557957 and KB4560960 updates, which are supposed to be cumulative updates that bring numerous security fixes to Windows 10, are instead encountering a critical issue with the local security authority process. This has led some computers to randomly reboot with just a "your PC will automatically restart in 1 minute" message as a warning. This can be incredibly frustrating as it means you have to quickly save any work you've got open. Not only is it disruptive, but it could lead to a loss of data as well if you don't save in time. The good news is that this issue, though serious, doesn't seem to be affecting many PCs. Microsoft is also aware of the issue and has updated the KB450960 documentation to warn about the issue, stating that the local security authority subsystem service file might fail on some devices and that users may encounter an error message that says a critical systems process, see Windows System 32 LSASS.exe, failed with status code, and it gives a code. The machine must now be restarted. While it's good that Microsoft has now acknowledged this problem, there isn't an official fix at the moment, with the documentation just saying that Microsoft is working on a resolution and will provide an update in an upcoming release, or to put it more plainly, pie in the sky by and by when you die. Anyone suffering from this problem will be hoping that the resolution comes soon. Having a PC needing to reboot at random times is incredibly frustrating and could end up making the machine unusable. One way to avoid this is try at least to uninstall either the KB4557957 or KB4560960 updates, depending on which one you've got installed, which depends on which version of Windows you're running, which is a whole other set of problems. So if you experience random Windows restarts, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And I haven't acknowledged all the problems the previous updates have been having, though, have they?
No. No, just this one, because this one is actually pretty serious.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're one of those people who has huge files which take over a minute to save,
yeah,
you cannot save them between getting the warning and the system automatically rebooting. That's a problem. And there are, you know, particularly if you're on a network, it might be a slow network, whatever, it can take over a minute to save some things. And that's an issue. And if you've got a bunch of stuff open and you're fumbling around, because now when you're hurrying, you're not going to get everything right anyway, trying to save all your stuff, you may end up losing something. And that's nobody wants that.
It usually works the other way. When the computer says less than a minute remaining, you know that's about an hour.
Yeah, right.
Sad, but
that's when it's installing, not when it's rebooting.
Yeah. I guess rebooting it really means.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a Chromebook issue.
Okay.
I've been using my Chromebook, sign in, all this other stuff. This time it asked me to basically sign in from scratch. No problem. I've got two-step verification.
Yeah.
When I get to the two-step verification, I have the options tap yes on your phone or tablet.
Yeah.
Or use your phone number. Both are grayed out, so I can't do the second step.
Well, and you can't skip it.
No.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
Do you have?
Is there a third? Can you scroll? Is there a third option?
My options are those two grayed out or back.
Yeah. Do you have the Google Authenticator on your phone?
On my phone, I don't think so. No.
Yeah, that's why you can't do the second option. And if you haven't set up the phone number, you can't do the first option.
But I've got it set up for the phone number.
Try installing on your phone the Google Authenticator.
Okay.
That's the thing that lets you tap yes.
Isn't there an option in there to only use Authenticator and never use SMS? Because SMS is not safe anyway.
Not secure at all. And he may have set that, which means that if he doesn't have Authenticator, he's never going to get in. So, definitely download Authenticator onto your phone. And give it a little time to set up and percolate through Google's infrastructure. But then try it and see what happens. It should work.
Well, I certainly hope so. If not, we'll talk again next week.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yep.
Bye.
One of the nice things that Google allows is two-factor authentication, which is theoretically safer.
Mm-hmm.
It's something you know, your password, and something you have, your phone.
Yep.
And one of the things that Google has is a program called the Google Authenticator, which when you set it up on your phone, then connects to your little Google infrastructure and uses that, which, as Steve said, is much more secure than just phone number stuff. But if you have it set up to do Google Authenticator and you don't have the Google Authenticator, you're never going to get into your device.
I was going to say, it could be an issue.
And it's a quick download from the store. Install it. It's free. You're done. It's a cute little icon. It's kind of a G in a kind of a safe dial riveted weird thing. But at any rate, the idea is that with that actually installed, it just comes up and you can tap yes on that. And that's the idea behind that. So the two-factor authentication is actually a very good thing as long as both methods are secure. So In terms of one method, your password, it should be a long and complex password and unique, one that you don't use anywhere else. And in terms of the second factor of authentication, as we all know, SMS, text messaging, not tremendously secure, but Google Authenticator is very secure.
And part of the problems is that most of the authenticator services will fall back to text messaging, which is handy for you, but it also means when the bad guy is trying to break into your account, he can say, "Oh, I don't have the authenticator anymore. Send me a text message," and I've already cloned the phone.
Right.
Usually that would be a targeted attack. So if you're somebody important, that would be a danger.
Right.
But for average people, they probably wouldn't go that far.
No, it's probably not a big deal for the average person.
Yeah.
That's what's really nice about living inside somebody's ecosystem, right? So if I'm a Google guy, then I can use Google's authenticator. If I'm going to a Google system, I can use the Google Authenticator. So I can use it with any of the things that Google does, but I couldn't use it, for example, with Microsoft Office.
Yep. Because they want you to use their Microsoft Authenticator.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you may end up with multiples of those on your phone.
Yeah, and Apple has their own authentication service built into the OSs. So it pops up as a notification window.
Right. So
we run into that a little bit when we're bringing phones in for service. Most of the time they don't work, and that's why you brought it in for service. So in many cases, customers can get a loaner phone, but when they sign in to their account, it sends the code to the phone that doesn't work. So do you have any other devices? No. All right. Well, we'll fall back to text because you move the SIM card and then their phone number has moved.
Right.
And then you can get the text message.
Right.
But we don't like falling back to text.
Well, yeah, right. No, I absolutely
But sometimes
agree.
You have to.
You kind of have to. At least that safety valve is there.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least something.
Yeah.
Better than, out in the cold, nothing.
Right. There's very little that's really secure these days. They're finding that a lot of the communication methods that people use are very insecure.
Yeah.
Well, especially these GoToMeetings and all this other stuff right now. You know, they're getting hacked. And people, you know, are sitting there trying to have a business meeting or, you know, a go-to meeting and whatever. And all of a sudden some spoofer's in there and disrupting the whole thing. And, yeah, just, you know, no life.
And it's rough. We had a customer last week that someone got into his Facebook account and changed the password. And we think they were Vietnamese because they started buying ads for products in Vietnam in Vietnamese, and his Facebook account was tied to his PayPal account, so he was paying for it all, so he was able to cancel that. So now he's trying to get back in his Facebook account, and we're following the instructions that Facebook offers.
Good luck.
Right, yeah. And part of the problem is that the bad guys will change, well, if they're smart enough, they'll change all of your information. So you now have to prove that you are you to Facebook based on the information that's in the account, which is now wrong. And so you may never be able to get back into it. We've run into the same thing with Apple IDs and Google accounts. If you forget your password and you forget your security questions, or you don't have access to that email address anymore, you may not be able to get back into your account.
You have to create a whole new one.
And the reputation, this poor guy was 40-year business using this account, and his reputation is now being damaged.
Yep.
Yeah. And it happens. I had a friend this week call me up about a similar situation on Facebook. Again, some of it is you reused a password from something else.
Yep.
Some of it is you used an easy to guess password.
I have found, not to interrupt you, but that they use the same password for like their banking, their email, their every account is always the same password.
Or they'll try to do something they think is smart, like putting email and then that same thing.
Right.
And then Amazon and that same thing. Well, in the next breach, someone's going to see that. Oh, let's try PayPal and that same thing. Oh,
right.
Good, I'm in.
Yep, that's exactly
or they'll
right.
use the basic password, and then all they do is change maybe the last letter, thinking, well, it's different.
Yeah.
But it's, different and not hard for them to figure it out.
I like reading those password analysis that the good guys put out. When capital letters started to be required, almost always it's the first character is capital.
Right.
When numbers started being required, almost always the last character is the number one, or it'll be the year.
Right.
And so just by doing this analysis, the good guys And the bad guys have already done it. The good guys can follow find these trends. And that means that what you think is a smart thing to do isn't, because too many people are already doing it.
Well, it's just like we were saying there on Facebook, you know, those stupid games, you know, what's your elf name and everything else.
Yep.
And these people sit there and answer all this stuff. Matter of fact, I saw a couple ads lately. And the guy's sitting there, oh, I'm so-and-so. And the daughter is, because it wanted his year of birth. And then she goes, why don't you just give him your social security number, too? He goes, why would I do that? She goes, you gave him everything else.
That's right.
Did I tell a story here I read about? Two women are talking, chatting, over luncheon. And the one's son comes running in, and we're doing a genealogy project at school, and I need to know your maiden name. Oh, and the mom gets all happy about the kid doing his homework, and a few minutes later comes back in. All right, and now for my genealogy project, I need to know the street you grew up on. And then a few minutes later, and the mom is all happy, and the friend says, you know he's getting your security questions, don't you?
Yeah, right. That's why I have always said lie.
Yep.
What was the first street you lived on? Purple. What was your maiden name? Green.
Yeah.
What's Chair.
Your
fa-
yeah. What's your favorite color? Apple.
Exactly. And
red,
of course,
no
when
blue.
You,
ah!
What? and of course, when you use a password manager like NPass or LastPass or whatever, you put all of that information in the notes section. So when it comes to you and says, I've had that happen once or twice. You go somewhere and they say, we want to prove it to you. Pick your security question. You know, there's a list of the six.
Mm-hmm.
Which one did you pick when you signed up? Well, I don't remember, but
NPass
does.
Yep.
So I go there and it says, oh, yeah, what was the street you used to live on? And
the answer
that is whatever I gave puppy or what, you know, whatever it happens to be. And it lets me in. And so, you know, when you have a security question, I mean, particularly if it's something fairly simple, lie, because they can try a million choices. You know, they have lists of every city in the United States, of every street in the United States, of every city in the United States.
Or especially when they'll sit there and say, what was your first vehicle?
Right.
Running through that list isn't that long.
It isn't that long.
And especially if they narrow it down, given they might have an idea of when you were born.
Yeah. Now, that one I like to use and use the color of the car. So it's a little related to help you remember.
Right.
But I really like that blue Ford, so I'll put in blue for your first car. But the... Some of the, you know, who was your best friend in high school? That was 50 years ago. How am I supposed to remember?
I didn't have any friends in high school. Yeah. Thank you for opening that wound.
20 years ago when you set up this account, who did you put in?
Right. Oops. But that's why you need to write all this stuff down, and you need to write it down into a password manager that encrypts everything. And all you have to remember is one password. Make it a really good one. That one you can write down somewhere. Safe.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'll tell you what, when I used to work for a living, which life is much better now, but when I used to work for a living.
And we hate you now.
Yeah, thank you. When I used to work for a living and I had to go around I did a temp job at a company I won't name, in between jobs, as we actors say. I did a temp job in a company and they thought first day they'd prank me, right? They said, you got to update Norton on everybody's machine on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all went to lunch. Nobody gave me any password? Sort of password, the admin password or anything like that. Figuring when they came back, you know, I'd be sitting there going, machine. Out of an entire floor of people, 70, 80 people?
Mm-hmm.
There was one machine I couldn't get into. Everybody else had either an obvious password, like trust no one at the time, right? That was a big one. I went into one guy's thing. He had a Porsche poster on his wall. I typed in Porsche. It wasn't that. I typed in Porsche 911. It got in. Another one had half of them had sports figures.
Or better yet, you just pick up the keyboard, flip it over.
Yeah, that'd be on the bottom of the keyboard or the back of the monitor.
Or you wind up taking their desk drawer,
open
up the side, and they have that little drawer there with the glass on top. Oh, there's their password.
Or the really clever ones would put it in the bottom drawer on the inside
of
wall. I still found it.
Oh, yeah.
I found all but one. And when they came back, they were so disappointed.
So they expected you to sit there and waste their money doing nothing?
It was a prank. They don't care. Yeah, it's company's money.
Yeah.
They were doing it just to get to you.
Right. But yeah, it's just not... it's just not practical. I get that, for people to remember 60 character passwords. NPass will do it for you, and you don't have to remember them. And the longer the password, the less likely it will get broken into. This friend of mine who had a problem on Facebook, his password was short and it was a word. Well, a dictionary attack is going to find that really quickly.
That's why I'm trying to train myself to say passcode or passphrase.
Right, passphrase.
It's so hard because we've been saying password for 40 years.
One thing, and I know Steve will agree with me on this one, is nothing worse than when we used to get machines in, and he probably still gets it. And you say, okay, what's your password for email?
Yep, I don't have one.
I don't have one. Because you put it in like 15 years ago, and you never took the time to write it down. And it just does it automatically because you told it to save it, remember it, and then it's like, oh,
the problem is the computer remembers your password until it doesn't.
Yeah.
And then you better have it remembered somewhere else.
And that's why, you know, writing these down, and like you say, a password management program. Yes, it's a little upfront work. You know, you might have to spend, you know, part of a day setting everything up and like the phrases and the questions and all that. But I'll tell you, since I switched over to the NPass, because I was using Form Filler before, I like the NPass so much better. Because I can sit there and create one heck of a long password that nobody in this lifetime of mine is going to crack.
Right.
And Apple users already have one called the Keychain, and you're already using it, even if you don't know it. I get that all the time from someone. What's your password? Don't remember. Oh, let's look in your Keychain. Oh, I don't use that. So I open up their Keychain. There's all their passwords. Because every time you say... It's default on.
Good.
And when you type a password in, Safari or browser will pop up and say, do you want to save this password? And they said yes. And so it did. So it's in your Keychain. All right, we can look it up.
Yep.
Yes, you have Keychain. You are using it. And that's pretty good.
Especially,
everything is saved under your system password. So do not forget that one password.
Right.
Well, and that's just it. If you need that one password. And if you can't remember one password, it's really time to go to the home. I'm sorry, but it's one password.
Because nowadays, folks, I mean, they are, like I've been saying for a while, viruses are on the decline. The big thing right now is spyware and malware. And by that, I mean they're trying to get into your system to gather your personal information. Because once they get a hold of that, they've got the key to the city, folks. And you better hold on tight, because they're going to take you for every penny that they can, and then you're going to have to prove that you're innocent,
right?
Because they don't care. You know, they take your money and they're running.
That's exactly right. All right, that music tells me you wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but don't go away, because there's another hour of it coming up. We know you're a slow learner, so we're going to give you another chance. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we will be back very shortly. Take a quick bio break. I know I will. And we'll see you on the other side with a whole lot more of sound bites on the truly great and truly grateful to you that with your generous support, we can remain member-supported Jazz 90.1. It's the top of the hour, and we'll see you in just a few.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMCJazz901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites.
Going back, though, to the password program, though, it was funny because you bring that up, because I did have somebody talk. We were talking about that, you know, and they're sitting there saying, yeah, but it's so hard. How many times have we heard that?
Yeah.
You know, sitting there. All right. So I put to him, you know, all right, it's hard. You know, get it. You know, if you don't want to take the time to, you know, say set up the free program NPass, at least get a $2 notebook.
Right.
And write it down.
And write down and create your own. Nothing that you can't do. As a matter of fact, you can go to, we've got it listed on our website. Sites that you can go and test out the strength of your password. So if you want to do up your own book and, you know, do capitals and punctuation and everything else and create your own so you have control. That's fine. That's okay. As long as they're long and they're not the same for each one.
And I have faith in you. You can learn a little bit.
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, you know, people are great at memorizing everything else. I can remember as a I used to tell...
You can remember who the third string second baseman was for the 1927 Toledo Mud Hens, and you can't remember a password? Well, wrong. You can. Just do it.
Well, as growing up as kids, you know, we didn't have the smartphones. You had to memorize phone numbers.
That's right.
You could sit there, what was Aunt Carol's phone number? Blah, 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 blah. And you knew them. And you could sit there and you didn't even think about it. You could memorize, but we've gotten so
now I don't even know my own phone number. I got to look it up.
I remember my first phone number. I have to stop and think of my phone number now.
Yeah, I can still remember my phone number from home.
Yep. Yeah, we've gotten so complacent that we're letting the machines do it that our minds are going to mush.
Well, so, and that's an interesting argument some people are trying to make about extending Fifth Amendment self-incrimination protection to your smartphone. Because it is a literal extension of your brain. It holds memories that you can't. So it should be protected,
too. They just said the police cannot force you to unlock your phone.
Yep.
They just said
That foregone conclusion thing they threw out.
Right.
So, yeah, we know what's on your phone. We know it's your phone, so it's a foregone conclusion. You know the password, so you might as well give it to us.
Right.
Well, that the foregone conclusion is you know the password. Not that the contents of the phone are what we think it is.
Of course, if you've got facial recognition set up, they just have to hold the phone up to your face. Yeah. But that's a separate issue. But we did have a question in the YouTube chat. I'm sorry, you guys.
No, I was just going to say. So you know, even if you don't want to use a program, get a simple little book and create your own. Right. The only thing that's limiting you is your own mind.
And
that's
the biggest tip there, when you have a print a written down list, cross one off when you change it.
Leave space.
You've got enough pages.
Yeah. Leave spaces.
How many times have we sat with a customer and they try this one and then leaf forward a few more pages? All right, try this one. Leaf forward a few more pages. Cross them off when they're...
Right.
Use a page for each system.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then you can cross it off and add a new one. It's not like you're going to run out of pages in that notebook. How many systems are you on?
Yeah. And a lot of people will get like an address book. And so A is going to be your Apple and your Amazon.
Right.
And G for Google. And
right.
Yeah.
There's so many ways to do it.
Right. All right. So we had Alfredo in the YouTube chat. Said there's many offers of refurbished laptops with i5 and i7 processors running Windows 7. A lot of them are sold through eBay and Amazon, and a lot of companies like Newegg and Linktronics. It would be great if you talking about some tips to upgrade them to Windows 10. I think it's still possible to upgrade them for free. Well,
no.
Don't. Well, first, you will find that many of those are slightly underpowered by today's standards. If you wanted to run Linux on them, they will run like a charm.
That's what I was going to say. Don't use it for Windows 7. Use it for Linux or the Chrome.
Right. You can run Cloud Ready's Neverware's Cloud Ready on them.
That would work
kind
just
of turn
as
into
well.
A Chromebook.
Yeah.
But if you want to run Windows 10 on them, first you'll be fairly disappointed. They probably will run fairly slow. But we think that the authentication servers are still running.
Right. So you can download the Windows installer, and they have a media creation tool if you're going to install it on a different computer.
Right.
And when you install Windows 10, it will use the existing Windows 7 license to upgrade. Supposedly, the free upgrade ended several years ago, but no one told the activation servers.
Right.
So it appears to still work, although we can't guarantee how much longer it will still work.
Right. But theoretically, it does still work.
Yeah, and the fact that they're not already running Windows 10 probably means they won't run it well. And it's not necessarily just the performance of the CPU. It's the drivers for everything else, the video driver and audio driver and Wi-Fi
and
driver.
Is it going to have enough memory in it?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, like we've said for a long time, the price of poker keeps going up and up, folks. And that old Windows 7 machine, sure, maybe 8 gig was fine, you know, back then.
A lot of them only have 2 gig.
Yeah. And a lot of people will see this, you know, Windows computer for $200. Oh, I'm going to buy that. It's only $200.
Mm-hmm.
And it's overpriced for what it is.
Yeah, right.
So shift it over a little bit and look at the Chromebook. A $200 Chromebook is going to run a whole lot better.
And you don't pay for an operating system, spyware, malware, or viruses.
Yep. Right. And most of what you want to do on it anyway is probably web and email and photos, and that works just fine.
And that
fine.
All just works fine. And if you wanted to run Android apps, you can. If you want to run Linux apps, you can.
And that does everything.
You want at least 4 gig of RAM, but you can do all those things. 8 is better.
Yeah, but you can always hook up an external hard drive. So if you want to get into photo editing and all that other stuff, you know, you're not limited. You can download one of those apps, open it up, grab the photo, whether it's up on the cloud or over on the hard drive, do all your editing. You're not limited.
Right. So there are a couple things you cannot do, and I feel bad. A friend of mine just bought a WebAround, which is that thing sits behind you.
Yeah.
The problem is he's only got a Chrome box. And Zoom doesn't do backgrounds on Chrome.
Which is
I feel bad. I didn't know that. But it is what it is. So you get that little bit of limitation there.
Is it the Chrome box itself, or is it that his video card isn't good enough?
No, it's Zoom. Zoom doesn't have the option unless you're on the desktop.
Because we ran into that at Cider, that my iPad Pro I can do Zoom backgrounds on. But my wife's older iPad mini can't because it doesn't have enough of a video card.
Right. Well, but in this case, it's the fact that you don't get the option unless you're on the desktop version.
Yeah.
So you can't do it on your phone. You can't do it on your regular tablet.
It works on my iPad.
It works on your iPad.
Yeah.
So it apparently checks.
Checks somehow, yeah. When I was digging into it, when Shirley couldn't get hers in, it said if you didn't have enough of a video card, then it may not show you the option.
Yeah, my friend had his up while we were doing a meeting, and on the back, he had the spacewalk going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was video.
Seeing, you know, because he got the video of it, and you see the astronauts out there switching the batteries around and everything else.
Although it does get a little annoying if, you know, 10 or 12 people in there are all running different backgrounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tend to either put up the moon or Betty Boop in her living room. or the Death Star. Those are and
that's no moon.
Oops.
Alfredo, it's probable that you could run Windows 10, but you may not be satisfied depending on the...
Save yourself the trouble and not do it.
Yep.
I mean, we're only helping you out avoid the utter frustration that we know you'll have. And the second thing is, you know, I'll stick to Windows 7. No, you don't even want to do that because that's got more holes in it than Swiss cheese.
Right. I have bought several refurbished i5 processor laptops and put Linux on them. They run like tops. It's great. But I certainly wouldn't run Windows 10 on them.
No.
I certainly wouldn't.
Like you say, if he was willing to learn another operating system and go with, like, Linux, you know, all right, if you're going to...
Or Cloud Ready from Neverware, that would be fine.
But Linux would be a great opportunity, you know, since he is getting this for cheap. You know, if he messes it up, he can just reload it and play around with it. Gain the experience on this other machine. And then from there, he might want to do it on one of his other machines and upgrade it. You know, like you, switch totally off of Windows and go strictly Linux.
What I did was I bought a refurbed i7 with 8 gig of RAM.
Mm-hmm.
Took out the... and one of the reasons that they're inexpensive is because they, for example, will have crappy hard drives.
Yeah. Small...
And small and slow and horrible hard drives and probably not good video graphics in them.
Yep.
Well, I didn't care about the graphics since I am not playing games on it.
Right.
And I swapped out the crappy little hard drive for a 256 gig SSD card. Now it boots up in less than 8 seconds, runs like a top. It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing cost me under $300.
Yeah.
But I'm running Linux on it, not trying to run Windows 10.
And you got one kick-ass butt.
And I got a kick-ass machine. All right, the Federal Communications Commission is kicking off its investigation of last week's T-Mobile outage by seeking public comment. Government agencies, public safety entities, businesses, and individuals are encouraged to submit comments about their experiences during the 13-hour outage. T-Mobile's outage was so big, even Edge Pie was mad. We seek comments on the impact of these outages from the perspective of affected public safety entities, as well as state and local governments, the FCC said in a public notice. Are there estimates of how many calls, including 911 calls, failed or were affected by the outage? The outage prevented customers from making calls, receiving calls, and in some cases sending text messages, which is why I thought that was your problem, over T-Mobile's voice over LTE or VoLTE network. And social media reports indicated that 911 calls were affected as well. What?
Don't call it VoLTE. Yeah, right.
Besides government and public safety organizations, the FCC is seeking comments on this outage's impact from the perspective of affected individuals and enterprise customers. The FCC did set a deadline of July 8th for submitting comments. The FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, said the outage was unacceptable and said the FCC will be demanding answers. It doesn't mean that T-Mobile will face any punishment. In a previous case, Pai called all mobile carriers' response to Hurricane Michael in Florida completely unacceptable, but imposed no punishment. T-Mobile's explanation of last week's network failure said the trigger event is known to be leased fiber circuit failure from a third-party provider in the Southeast, not our fault. Mobile networks are designed to survive such failures, but in this case, T-Mobile said its network redundancy failed us. And see, the network redundancy failed. They didn't screw up making it redundant. The network redundancy failed us and resulted in an overload situation that was then compounded by other factors, like, I suppose, stupidity in the engineers. The overload then caused an IP traffic storm that spread from the Southeast to create significant capacity issues across the IP multimedia subsystem core network that supports VoLTE calls. To prevent recurrences, T-Mobile said that it was working with our IMS and IP vendors to add permanent additional safeguards to prevent this from happening again, and we're continuing to work on determining the cause of the initial overload failure. We'll see if this doublespeak results in any real-world result. Are you a T-Mobile customer, and were you affected? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And of course, as we become more and more dependent on our phones for, well, everything, yep, an outage becomes much more severe and problematic than it would have in the past.
You should see the look on some of the kids' faces when their parents bring the phone in for a repair and we tell them it's going to take a couple hours. Hours.
Hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have no identity of their own.
Yeah.
You know, I get
sad.
It.
Sad.
Yeah. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ed?
Yeah, I just want to ask a quick question. You're talking about the memory on the, about 4 gig on the, I'm running a mic here.
Chromebook.
Chromebook, thank you very much. Good morning. And you'll see in the ads that most of them are, what, $200-$300 for the same memory, but they always say that, well, you know, there's this sort of footnote that with the flash drive, you can go for like 32 or something memory.
Right.
Is that what, you stick a flash drive in and does it automatically give you more memory?
No, that's not memory, that's storage.
Right, so the flash drive is essentially the hard drive. You can think of memory as your desk and the hard drive as your file cabinet. You can have a whole bunch of stuff in a file cabinet, but you can only have so many things on your desk at once.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah. You never saw my 6-foot piles on my desk.
Yeah.
But the basic idea
to get you to buy it, or
well, often
work?
Often it will give two things. It will say 4 gigs and 32 gigs. The smaller number is the memory, the bigger number is the storage.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they're in the same units, so that's what makes it confusing.
Right. But 4 gig is how much stuff you can do simultaneously. 32 gig is how much storage you have for documents and apps and everything else. So it's essentially the amount of memory in your machine to run things simultaneously and the amount of storage on your hard drive in order to save stuff to run later.
It's like adding, you know, it might have 32 gig of storage, and by putting the flash drive in, it's like adding another drawer to that file cabinet.
Right.
That you're getting another, whether you put in, say, another 64 gig flash drive. Now, instead of having one drawer for storage, you've now got this additional file drawer because it's the flash drive is for storage.
But in general, you can't upgrade the memory in a Chromebook. And in fact, many laptops these days, you can't upgrade the memory.
Yeah, it's all surface mounted.
Right.
Yeah, because the differential between 4 and 8, that's pretty significant when it comes to cost.
Right, because memory is much, much faster, measured in nanoseconds, and storage is milliseconds. So it's the same concept of a NAND flash drive. That's why they're called as NAND flash memory. But main memory runs so much faster, it costs significantly more. Storage memory is cheaper because it doesn't have to run so fast.
It's much slower. So, for example,
add a flash drive to it. Does it automatically step, or do you have to reprogram it to tell it to, like you would on an SD card for pictures, to tell it to go there?
Nope, it'll automatically recognize it. So, for example, in my Chromebook right now, I have 8 gig of RAM, and I have a 32 gig hard drive. But I also have an SD card in here, which gives me an extra 128 gig of storage. So I keep all my movies, all my pictures, all my music on that SD card.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that all my apps and Linux files and things that are running on the internal drive, that saves that storage for those things.
But for just everyday fussing around, four gig should be sufficient, don't you think?
Four gig of memory should be sufficient, and a 16 or 32 gig drive should be sufficient.
But if you want to get into photos at all, then 64 gig storage, 128 gig storage.
Right, but that you can plug in.
And you can plug that in separately.
Right.
Although, make sure some of the really cheap Chromebooks don't have an SD slot.
Right.
Good. Okay, that helps me out. Thanks very much. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
It's kind of like the C drive and the D drive on a Windows machine. You have to tell it which one to point to.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you get when I want to open something up, I go to my file manager, and I can look on that and say, oh, I've got the SD card, I've got Google Drive, and I've got my local storage.
Does it differentiate it by name or?
Yeah. So down the left, it shows
16 icons that say untitled.
Down the left, I have my files, which is the local storage, Google Drive, which I can open up and see all the things on Google Drive, and SD card, which I can open up and see the folders and files on that. And then when I do that, then I see in the middle window, just like any other file manager, I can see my stuff. So if I wanted to play a movie, it's right there. If I want to look at a picture, it's right there. If I want to listen to audio, it's right there.
We were doing a Windows migration to Mac yesterday, and the PC hard drive had three partitions on it. It had the recovery volume, it had a system reserve volume, and it had an untitled volume. So they went to the effort of naming those other two volumes, but never named the main volume. So in Windows Explorer, it was C:untitled.
Right. when the last time we took a trip, which was long before the coronavirus business, I threw a bunch of movies on here from Google Movies. So the entire 8 or 9 hour trip, I could watch movies, I could listen to music, I could do whatever I wanted to do, because they were all on the SD card.
Yeah. SD.
The flash drive, the SD card, yeah. Without taking up my main storage, so that was pretty nice. It was easy and simple and quite fast to do. I had hundreds of hours, I still have hundreds of hours of music on it, and
what you can fit on them is unbelievable.
I've got a picture showing an SD card from, you know, ages ago was like 16, you know, K, and then a smaller card from, you know, half an age ago was, you know, 16 gig, and now we've got 128 gig micro SD cards,
yeah,
smaller mm-hmm. than your thumbnail.
Yeah.
I remember telling somebody that the first computer I ever used was a Cosmac VIP, which had 4K of RAM.
Yep.
No, it had 1K of RAM. It had 1K of RAM. And they said, you mean meg? No. K. 1K of RAM is what I had on that thing. And the first Apple IIs, 8K.
Yeah. You get that 16K was on this giant foot-long card.
Oh, yeah. Well, you could get up to whopping 64K of memory.
The Trash 80 that we used to have at work, that had a whole 16K. And then you used to put in the 8-inch floppies.
Yep.
And you have to sit there and program everything and then load it off the floppy or floppies into the Trash 80.
And when you had those 8-inch floppies, they had 90K of storage, 100K of storage.
Yep.
And then I got an Apple II, which had 140K, and then up to 160K.
Yep.
You even got stickers to put on it to tell people it's 160K. And those were huge.
Yep.
I remember I was working on the old IBM machines at Kodak and installing the hard cards. Remember those? The 5
Absolutely.
And the 10?
5 and 10 gig cards.
I don't think they were a gig.
Meg.
Yeah.
It was the Apple Cider. It was a 5 megabyte hard drive that sat next to the Apple III. It held every business program available for the Apple III and still had 3 megs for your own files. Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember, I was such the hero going around to everybody's machine, either putting in a 5 or a 10.
Yep.
Yep.
And it was unbelievable.
Yep. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just a couple of minutes.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Very exciting. Apple has fixed a serious problem in iOS 14. Due in the fall, where apps can secretly access the clipboard on users' devices. Once the new OS is released, users will be warned whenever an app reads the last thing copied to the clipboard. This is more than a theoretical risk for users, with countless apps already caught abusing their privacy this way. So, to put this in perspective, if you copy a password to the clipboard, now any app can read it. Worryingly, one of the apps caught snooping by security researchers was China's TikTok. Given other security concerns raised about the app, as well as broader worries given its Chinese origins, this became a headline issue. At the time, TikTok owner ByteDance said the problem related to the use of an outdated Google advertising SDK that was being replaced. Yeah, we're blaming Google's SDK on an Apple computer for TikTok stealing all your data. Okay, got it.
Wasn't my fault.
Yeah, right, exactly. But it may not, in fact, have been replaced. With the release of the new clipboard warning in the beta version of iOS 14, now with developers. TikTok seems to have been caught abusing the clipboard in a quite extraordinary way. So it seems that TikTok didn't stop this invasive practice back in April like it promised it would after all. It's likely that TikTok on Windows and on phones is doing the same thing. So if you have, for example, copied a password from a password manager to an app, you might want to change that password after you delete TikTok. Are you a TikTok user? Yeah, like any of our people are. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
There's a lot of cryptocurrency viruses that do the same thing on Windows. They'll watch for a Bitcoin address to be copied onto the clipboard, grab that and put their own address in. And so any money you trying to send somewhere goes to somebody else.
Right.
So when you're trying to pay the ransom for your files, your ransom has been kidnapped and pays to someone else instead.
Right. Right. So you want to be very aware that security is really, really, really hard, and nobody does it well. And the real problem is, because there are so many pieces in the chain, any one of those, you know, as you may know, when you string four or five hoses together, the problem is rarely a hose. It's the connector between the hoses. That's where your leaks are.
Yeah.
And the same thing is true when you link five or six apps together. The app itself may be secure, but that linkage between apps is where the leaks occur. So you want to be very aware of those, of things like that. And it's, you know, this happened to be caught by Apple people. It could have been caught by Google people. It could have been caught by Microsoft people. It wouldn't matter. And so you want to be aware that just because we said Apple doesn't mean it's just Apple. It's pretty much anything. You want to be very aware that things like TikTok and things like, you know, any of those things. We already know that Facebook steals everything, and so it's a real issue when it comes to being secure. You got to be aware of what sort of platform you're on and what you're doing and why you're doing it and where you're doing it. And those are the things you have to be aware of.
Yeah, and we see a lot in the Mac community. It's slowly changing that people have become too complacent over the years that since we haven't had the virus problem on the Mac that Windows did, they don't anticipate and they don't recognize the malware problem we're getting now. That it's a lot easier for the bad guys to write a malicious ad than it was to write an actual virus, because that ad will play on any computer.
Right.
In fact, on your Chromebook here, you got an ad saying that your Windows was hijacked and you needed to call this phone number. And so frequently we run into people that get tricked by it and you know, ruins their credit, their life savings. Sometimes you can get it back, sometimes you can't.
Right. All right, to the phones. I'm confused. Who's calling?
This is Penny.
Penny, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Florida, and I'm originally a Rochesterian.
Oh, well, congratulations. How are things down in Florida?
It's pretty muggy. It looks like it's going to rain any second, but otherwise good.
So very much like Rochester right now.
Yeah.
So what's up, Penny?
So it seems like I'm running into problem between all my devices. So to try to cut the long story short, I am using three, maybe four of my devices alternating depending what project I am doing.
Sure.
My iPad, I have an old iPad. I use it in emergency. I can do my emails, and pretty much it's not good for anything else. So it's about 7 years old, but I have some old photos saved there, and that's that. I have a more up-to-date iPad, which is a 7, so that's running as 13.4, I think, iOS. And then I also have a refurbished iPhone 6, refurbished because there was something wrong with the old one, and that's what I got through the insurance company. Sure. And then and that's running an 11.4 iOS. So these are all my Apple products. And then I have an HP laptop notebook. I also run that with external drives. So like you were talking about ISD cards, so I keep my photos and videos on one of my external drives, and anything else, important things, music, on a different one. So I'm not overkilling my actual computer.
Right.
So the problem is this. As I've been, and by the way, each of these I am updating, except the old one, the old iPad, because it doesn't update anymore.
Right.
Each of the devices I update, backup, and scan every day. That's how I start my day. Okay. So now, ever since I had this new iPad, which is about 6 months old, all of a sudden, it seems like all my albums, say photo albums, they don't merge into one. So on the new iPad, that's my latest device, I wind up with three different family albums and three different, I don't know, and another collection of albums. So everything that I collected or made an album, say, on my first device and then on my second device, and now on my third iPad, and not to mention that it doesn't even sync with my HP computer. So that's my first big issue, that how can I merge them all into one? Is it because they are not running on the same iOS that they won't talk to each other?
It's probably not the same iOS. It may be because you're logged into different Apple IDs on each device. But it's more likely the settings on each device. If you want to sync your photos between all your devices, you need to turn on something called iCloud Photos. And in the older systems, it was called iCloud Photo Library. And that will make sure everything is synced under a single Apple ID. And you can also install iCloud for Windows, and you can get your PC in on the photo and document syncing as well.
Steve, wait. I am pretty sure I'm using the same Apple ID for all my Apple products.
Yeah, so on each device, you want to make sure you've got iCloud Photos turned on so that it will synchronize each photo and each album between your devices. And then you also want to check your iCloud storage to make sure you have enough storage space for that. We've seen people who've run out of storage and then can't get everything synced.
Yeah, now I am pretty much on the borderline because I keep on getting Google messages all the time that I'm running out of storage. Yet I am on that program now already, was giving me more. I think it's 99 cents a month. And then I'm getting 50 gigs instead of the original 15 or something like that. So I already enrolled into that program. So that's one issue. I mean, it's not a big deal, but it's annoying when I am on my new iPad, and then that's where I am seeing, and it's not even exactly duplicated, because whatever is inherited from the old iPhone and from the, from the old iPad, and from the iPhone, now it appears on my new iPad. That's my latest, newest device. So it's the new iPad that winds up with three family albums and three of everything, and the photos or the collections within those albums are not exactly the same, depending what it has. I'm using the word inherited from the previously existing devices. So somehow that's...
Right.
I mean, I can live with it, but I prefer not. And also, I think because they appear like three different devices, you know what I mean? If I can merge them into, therefore, on my storage space, it would take less of space too, I think.
Yeah, that's why you want to make sure you have the iCloud Photos library option turned on all your devices, and not just PhotoStream. PhotoStream only syncs the last 1,000 devices. You need to have Photo Library turned on each device. So on all four of your devices, you need to turn that on so that it will sync them all with each other.
Okay. I mean, the old iPad, I am limited anyway because it won't update anymore. So, you know, I mean, that's almost out of the picture from that point of view. But even, okay, so now relating question. So whenever I use my most of the time it's my iPhone because it's smaller and easier to carry around. That's the one I'm taking pictures and videos with. And by the way, my pictures and videos, they are part of for what I'm doing, they are my teaching devices as well. So it's really important that at least my pictures, they sync in with at least with my new iPad. So, okay, it seems like that my camera roll, right, which is an iPad, Apple product, seems to be talking to Google Photos. Because you guys keep on talking about Google Photos that there is free storage, right? So I figured, why should I pay Apple for the extra storage if I can get free storage from Google Photos? But they seem to be talking to each other. So whenever I am taking new photos, they go in the camera roll, and within minutes, they seem to appear in my Google Photos.
So, yeah, if you've installed the Google Photos app on your device, you can tell it to sync with your camera roll as well.
Okay,
and there are two options in syncing your Google Photos. I'm trying to find the actual words they use. One way is it syncs and counts towards your storage space, and that's high quality, I think.
No.
And then the other way it syncs and doesn't count toward your storage space, which is original quality.
I think the other way around. It is the high quality, and then in the brush space, it's free storage.
Yeah, high quality is free, and original quality counts.
Okay, so if I set it up like that, which I did on my iPhone, because that's what I use most of the time, then it should automatically apply at least to all my Apple products or all the other products which have Google Photos installed, right?
Right, you have to have Google Photos installed on each device as well.
Okay, so on my HP laptop, I have Google Photos. As soon as I open it up, Google Photos appears right away. Yet on my HP laptop, I keep on getting messages that I'm running out of storage. So
are the messages coming from HP or coming from Google?
Or from
Apple.
It comes from Google, but it just happens to be on an HP laptop. But it comes from Google. So again, they are not talking. Then it's the Google Photo, which is installed on the HP laptop, isn't talking to the mobile device.
Well,
it sounds like it is, but you need to go into the Google Photo website. And you'll see how much space you're taking and how much is left.
But then on the Google Photo, you guys saying that I have unlimited. So then why does it matter?
It's unlimited only for certain sizes of photos.
Right. So what you need to do is go into the Google website.
Yes.
On any of your devices. And right. In the upper left corner are those three bars. And if you click on those, you get a menu, and one of the choices is settings.
Right.
And if you go in there, you will see upload size for photos and videos.
And I got it high, what it suggested.
Okay, so high quality.
Yes, yes. And that's how I said, on the computer, I didn't set it up. I didn't go into it because I thought automatically from my mobile devices, I have it set up where usually the photos come from. That's what I'm using for picture taking. That's where I set it up on the mobile device with high quality. Then I just figured that automatically the Google Photo will inherit that instruction on my computer as well.
It may be that you need to go into the
account management.
The account management or
storage management.
Go into Google Photos on your HP
on the computer
itself and check there.
Yeah, because I have my Google Photos set to the high quality for free, but some of my photos are bigger than they allow, so they take up space.
Right.
So the unlimited space is only for photos that are less than, 12 megapixels? So it may be that some of your photos are too big for the free, and they are using some of your space.
Oh, I do see sometimes appearing some photos on my Google Drive, not specifically on the Google Photos, but on
right.
Google Drive.
Google Drive counts towards your storage.
Right.
Correct.
So
and
if you
I
go,
I have learned my lesson, and I know if I am forwarding, for example, a video via email as an attachment, then it uses Google Drive
right.
when I am sending it. So as soon as I send it, I know I have to go to my Google Drive, and I'm cleaning my Google Drive quickly and then taking off whatever I sent. So I
right.
keep
an
eye on
Penny,
my Google Drive.
Penny, in Google Drive, you can also see how much of your storage you're using. It's on the left side.
Right.
If it's too much, then you can, if you click on the word storage, you'll see a list of all of your files, and you can see how much storage each one uses. So if you've got a particularly large file you've saved, you can delete it or move it to another device.
So now in relation to that, if I am going to delete that large file, I have looked this up, but you just said I have looked it up and I have seen some large files. They are usually videos. Okay, if I delete them from Google Photos, which is in the cloud, before I delete them, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I should make, if I want to keep them, right?
Yep.
I should download it maybe to one of them, one of my external
yes.
drives.
Yes.
And then delete it, right? Because once I delete it from the cloud, it's gone forever.
Right. Yeah.
Gone forever. You are exactly correct.
Yeah. So if you take it out of the Google Drive folder, then it will be removed from your Google storage.
Right. So make sure you download it and right. back it up first, and then you right. can delete it.
That's what I'm going to do. May I have one more quick question?
I'm sorry, we're actually we're at the end of the show. Thank you.
That's okay. I call back next week.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We're done. I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. That's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. Please call earlier next week. We are on for 2 solid hours, but the phones seem to blow up at the end of the show. But we're done. And I want to thank all of you. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can, with your generous and continuing support, we can continue to be member supported. Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to each other. We'll see you then.